But arrows, I said, well, they're going to shoot at the helicopter. So I did take aerials. I got some aerial pictures of the city. And I was a little worried being up in the air shooting them, but they were still burning the city because the fires were going on and all the different things that happened. But riot was one of the great things that we covered as a news story because it brought back a lot of memories of the military thing when I was at. And the staff did a great job in covering that. We had pictures getting back. A lot of pictures were run quite large in the paper. Free Press then put together a whole package of the riot, which included my pictures that they had, mostly my pictures and all the big ones we had. And the Free Press at that time, 1968, was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for the coverage of the Detroit riot, along with a lot of the pictures that I had on there. And I don't know whether that meant anything, but it did. Mm-hmm. All the staff did a great job. Many other different assignments that would come up. I did a lot of presidents coming to the United States, so most all of them, all the 10 presidents, all the mayors in the city. I got to know them very well, all the prominent people that I had covered that I would do. My great picture, I think, was taking a picture of Martin Luther King. In 1968, we were on strike at the Free Press. And I knew Martin Luther King was coming to the area and he was going to talk to the Grosse Pointe to Grosse Pointe High School. So I went there and covered them. There were all protesters outside, Lopsinger with his groups and all that. They were protesting outside. So I got inside and Martin Luther King made a good talk. After he got through, that's when I think the picture, he was like meditating. And I creeped up and took a picture as he was meditating. And that became very, very... Yes. Popular throughout the years. As a matter of fact, the Free Press came back to publishing. I said, I got a picture of Martin Luther King in taken while we were on strike. So they used the picture at that time. Who would figure that then later he was assassinated 2 weeks later, say in 1968 when I took it. Well, all these things are very handy. Working through the years at the Free Press, all these various different assignments. One assignment, I'll tell you that, really interested me. I wanted to update the file on Jimmy Hoffa. Newsweek magazine also says, you know, he's going to run for president. We want to update the file. The Free Press want to update the file too. So I called Jimmy Hoffa. I knew Jimmy Hoffa very well. And I called him, I'd like to get some pictures of you, you know, candid shots. And he says, fine. He lived on Lake Orion. So I went there, I think, 8 o'clock in the morning. I said, I'll get you before you go out. So I got there. He was on the phone talking and everything else. He got through the phone. He says, I don't know, just talking something he said to his wife or something. That he had to go to lunch or something. I don't remember for sure, but he talked something like that. Then he came to me and he said, Tony, where do you want to take the picture? I said, you know, it's a nice day. Let's do it outside. I had a bench out there. I said, fine. So I went out there, took a whole series of pictures of him outside, a couple of rolls, came back to the paper. And I didn't even develop the pictures that day. I did develop them later on. I made a set of prints for Newsweek, who wanted some. Made some for the paper, but, you know, they weren't going to use them. Update the file, Jimmy Hoffa was running. 3 days later, wife said that Jimmy Hoffa is not coming home. He's missing. And not, you know, we want to know where he is. Because, you know, sometimes he'd go out and not come back for a day or two. And that's when it came through. And we got the word that Jimmy Hoffa is missing and disappeared. No one knew where he was or what happened. Right away, we ran some pictures. Newsweek ran the picture on the cover of their magazine. These were the last pictures taken of Jimmy Hoffa, taken the morning of the afternoon day he disappeared.
And you were one of the last public figures to see him.
Yeah, the FBI came. They wanted prints and everything else, his clothing, what he has. He was missing the same clothing that he had. So those pictures were all became used and used and used again when he just made this movie on Jimmy Hoffa a couple of years ago. The Los Angeles Times and the Danny DeVito, who produced the picture, called me personally over here at the phone, wanted a set of pictures so they could see for the makeup or how the habits Jimmy have. So I sent Danny DeVito a whole set of prints, and the LA Times ran a whole page. They wanted pictures, and the wire service wanted prints, so I let them have the pictures, so did we. So the pictures became very handy. A lot of books were written about Jimmy Hoffa, and they used all the pictures I had of him.
Did he seem preoccupied that morning that you took those photographs?
No, he seemed very happy, very, you know, Jimmy Hoffa, how he was forceful. He was really thought he was going to be elected, you know, get to be elected president. I think he would.
President of the Teamsters.
Of Teamsters,
yes.
Yeah, I'm almost certain that he had that feeling, because this was at the stage that he was. I know a lot of people have called me, and I was on all these TV programs and on a network program. When they came, I wanted to know what happened to Jimmy Hoffa. They come and interview me on these special shows that you would have. Come from New York, they brought a crew in. So we went to Fox and Hounds and where he was, and I had some of the prints. They asked me, "Oh, what do you think happened to him?" I said, "Well, if I knew," I says, "if I knew what happened to him, I'm certainly I wouldn't be here today."
No,
you know, I tell him, because I really don't know, because he didn't say what he was going to do. But they're all speculations and things that they have. It could have been an inside job from Teamsters. Could have been another connection that people didn't want him around. They didn't want him to be president. I think
there were two other
Frank
people
Fitzsimmons. We see, the only thing you have to look at this thing on Jimmy Hoffa, that when Jimmy went to jail, he turned over his presidency to Frank Fitzsimmons and said, "When I get out, I want my job back." So when he got out of jail, Frank Fitzsimmons says, "No, you're not getting. You are now a felon. You've been in jail. You're not going to get the job back." So they became bitter enemies at the time, because then he had to fight Frank Fitzsimmons. So I don't know how all this came about. He's missing still to this day. He could be alive, could be dead, no one knows. But my picture still have the record of Jimmy Hoffa. Well, all the different type of assignments would come up with me. An interesting thing came. I covered the Vatican quite a bit. And one of my most impressive jobs was the first photojournalist in the world to have, I'd say, not an audience, but just a session with Pope John the 23rd. When I went in 19, covered the election of Pope John in 58, he came on the balcony, and I met his secretary, Lars Capovilla. And when I got there back in 1960, I was doing some preparation for Limerick. I called him. I said, "I'd like to get a picture of Pope John." See, and he said, "Well, no way." He said, "You can't get a picture of Pope John." I said, "You know, he doesn't grant this." I knew Capovilla. I told him where I was staying. I said, "There's an opportunity to give me a call." The last day I was there, I got a call. Capovilla said, "Look, Manzu is making the bust of Pope John. You could come in just for 1 or 2 minutes, not even that. Take a picture of Pope John before Manzu comes in and leave. Just take your picture and go. Don't talk. Don't say anything. I'll get you in there and take a picture." I says, "Fine. That's all I want, a picture." So I walked in there. Got to the session was set up for about, 4:30 in the afternoon or 5. I can't remember. And Pope John was standing at his desk, walked into the ante room. I decided to have two cameras. Now, this is the key thing. I thought of it very strongly. We had fast film, so I thought I'd take two cameras. I'll put color in one and black and white in the other. Now, we're talking about 1960. I said, I'm going to go ahead and use color. So what color? So I decided to put, walk in there, don't use flash. Because if I use flash, he would know how many pictures I'm taking, it would be disturbing. So with the fast film, I decided I could handle it with the fast lenses. Just take as many pictures as I can with the existing light in the room. So I walked in, he's standing by his desk. I was only about 4 feet away from him, or three. I picked the camera and I start clicking away, real fast. Picked up the other and start clicking away. Pope didn't move. I could have taken time exposures. Kept looking, and start clicking away. Then he turned to Secretary Lawrence Capovilla and said, when is this photographer going to start taking pictures? Now, he spoke in Italian, and I understood a little Italian. So I turned to Capovilla, and I says, I'm all done. I says, you know, I'm through. I'm sorry it took so long, you know. He says, but the Pope thinks you didn't take any pictures. I says, yes, I did. I said, what are you going to do? You're not supposed to talk or do anything, you know, with the Pope. So all at once I picked up and I explained to him what I was doing and all that. And this became a two-hour session. Lasted. I did a book on Pope John. It's a long story, but it became, I learned a lot of good things from him during the conversation. I came back. When I got out of the thing, I wrote down everything that happened in 2 hours because I didn't want to forget. Beating, I got back, I wrote all the stuff that had happened.
Were you satisfied with the quality of the photograph?
Oh, absolutely. Still used today. I did a book on Pope John then with some of the pictures I have. But this was one of, in other words, these pictures I got back were used all over the world. Mm-hmm. New York Herald Tribune ran a whole page. The Vatican newspaper, the Observatore Romano, ran pages of pictures of Pope John that I sent to them. I also sent prints to Pope John. They were used all over the world. In other words, it was a great accomplishment, I would say, being the first person ever to break the barrier of Pope John. Few quotes that were used quite a bit. If you remember what Pope John was saying in the interviews that he had with people, and a quote was used quite a bit that I wrote in my story. And that's the first time I said that he was going to have an ecumenical council. He says, I'm going to open the windows and let the fresh air in. And I used that. The other quote that was used quite a bit was that Pope John didn't speak English. See, he spoke all the languages, but not English. But talking to him, he was taking English lessons from an Irish priest. And then I says, oh, he's going to speak English with a brogue. Mm-hmm. But anyway, all these...
How would a newspaper or the Time magazines, what arrangements were made to use your photographs? Were you contacted with a newspaper contact?
Yes, we had, in other words, we could shoot for other newspapers according to the guild newspaper. We all belonged to the guild. It was a very important thing. We're 100% guild. On your own time, you could shoot pictures for magazines, providing for other newspapers that were within the 50-mile area that were in conflict with the Free Press. In other words, magazines were not in conflict. So we could do different assignments on our own, on our days off, whatever we have for Life magazine. Now, Life magazine, I did a lot of work for them. As a matter of fact, they wanted to hire me back in the early 60s. Frank Schischel was chief photographer there at the time, came here to the house. He said, why don't you come work for us? And I said, though, I like newspaper a lot better. I says, it's to me, I think it's a great advantage to working. I had several offers. One offer to be a presidential photographer, too. And I talked to Lee Hills about it. And then I had the family here. We talked about it. They decided that stay with newspapering. Yeah. To me, and all the different accomplishments, coming from the awards that we have and people I had, I'm the only photojournalist today that ever was knighted by the Vatican. I was received the Knight of St. Gregory the Great. That's the highest honor. That's the highest honor that ever could be given to a layman. And I had to go to the Vatican. The only one that could grant this is a pope. The pope is the only one that could bestow this honor on you. I think it was given to me by Pope John the 23rd and all the popes that I had private audiences with Pope Paul the 6th. I've had two private sessions with him. And I think Pope John must have left Capovilla something that I should be knighted because what I did and everything else obedient him. And this was a great experience, too, to have, and being the only photojournalist with this honor, and many other things that come. There's so many that I don't want to even mention of them that came along your way. I'll take a whole list of them, about 450 national, international, different awards that you get in photojournalism.
Did one or two of these awards really mean something very special to you?
Yeah, at the Michigan State University, I was inducted, the first photojournalist to be inducted in the Journalism Hall of Fame. So to me, it's a great honor. Other things, Man of the Year, the Artist of the Year, there are all these different assignments, 450 of them, and it's to me, it doesn't bother me. I think what happens with this situation, even with the paper throughout these years, is that every time there is pressure, when you become known, every picture you take, they expect the masterpiece. Everything come up. You want to take the picture. They expect it. Well, you do the best you can, and you do the best job you can. They come in good. I shoot the book covers for the Free Press. I just took some from Mitch Albom, and I also shot Charlie Vinson, all these other people that they have, Martin Cohn. But they expect great covers, which they come out very well. They like them. But this is what they have. Every time you go for something, you say, oh, Tony Spina's going to come take a picture of you. And they expect you to come up with the masterpiece. Well, you do the best. And I think by concentrating and putting your best effort in your jobs, your pictures will come out well. I don't like to, in other words, hurry up and get rid of them. I like to go ahead and do the best job and capture their personality into them.
You once told me that you're also very hesitant to accept an invitation at parties and social occasions where people hand you their camera and ask you to take a picture.
Well, the reason for it, there's a lot of reasons. I don't know their cameras. I don't know the film they have in there. They say, I want you to take a picture of me so I could tell people you took this photograph of me. And I reluctantly tell them, look, I'm sorry, but I don't know your camera. Have someone else do it because I don't want to take the picture because I don't know what you have in the camera. It may not come out good. They'll look at the lousy picture you shot of me. And this, in other words, I refuse to do it that way.
What is the standard you have for quality?
For the family. Right. I do it for the family. Mm-hmm. Take pictures of the family. And when I use it in the family, I use an ordinary point-and-shoot camera. I don't use my professional cameras. Mm-hmm. I use the regular little snapshot cameras that I have. My wife has. I got her point-and-shoot. And that's what we use. Mm-hmm. They're great to come out, candidates.
Tony, you mentioned earlier, and during this conversation today, you talked about, you've used the phrase assignment. Now, when you started with the Free Press in 1946, how did that term assignment, and how was your work determined? Did you come in the day and they tell you what to do? What is the work of a photographer in newspaper?
The assignments come from the city desk. They do stories. They would decide what pictures we had to shoot. The people that they were doing interviews or stories with. Now, we're not talking about breaking news stories. Mm-hmm. That's different. We're always at the FDR's ready to go on a breaking news job. Those are separate. We'd go out there and shoot that. But feature assignments, fashion assignments, food jobs, all these editorial assignments, portraits of people, headshots. All these were features and stuff that they come up, assignments every day, and we make, they'd make appointments and say, here's an assignment at 2 o'clock. Get a picture of so-and-so at 2. We had the address and everything else. The photographer would go alone. Or they would say, pick up a reporter at 1:30 and go. A reporter would come up to photo, and you go together with him on this assignment to shoot these people. Everything had to be typed out on the assignment sheet. They have a sheet, and copies were made. So we knew exactly where we were going. These are all pictures that are life and bread and butter of the newspaper, I mean, taking these type pictures. We're not talking about news jobs, because news jobs, instant. They tell you either on the phone or by radio. We have radios in our car exactly where to go. Like, we had the big Buell fire downtown. Mm-hmm. Remember about 12, 10 years ago? We had the big Buell fire that happened on a Friday at noon. Photographers happened. It was fire in a Buell building. So we sent two photographers out. Had them ready there. No assignment. You tell them to go. And then I went out there also, and the people were jumping out of windows and doing things. But these are news jobs. You always are very careful to have stars ready to go on news jobs. We had radios in our car and needed more help from photographers. If there are other assignments that interfered, if we had, say, appointments at 1 o'clock or 12:30 when a news job broke, they would be canceled and put off and done later, another day. See, a news job takes preference over all types of assignments. If you have anything that you're doing, they would be canceled, and everybody would cover news. That's a priority in a newspaper. But then the picture editor or someone in the city desk would call these people and say, we can't make your appointment today. We reschedule your appointment or do it later or another time. If a story was going to run that day, they would delay the story. If it was a feature story, run it another day. Because the news takes preference over everything in a newspaper.
As chief photographer, did you have any role in assignments of your staff?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You'd have to give... I assigned the photographers to go on the specific jobs, what to do. I'd put their name on an assignment sheet. If they needed any advice or any information on it, I'd let them know about it. They need a special lens or take some special film or special lighting. We'd have take it out of the storeroom, what we'd have. I had assigned the photographers for the various jobs. Some jobs, you know, photographers don't like to go on food jobs or fashion jobs or society, social events. They don't like this. But we had to do them along with everything else. All these are very important, and they were taken all in the jobs. And scheduling and assignments were always a big thing. And making a schedule, if we had to work a seven-day schedule, and photographers only work 5 days a week, 7.5 hours a day. So what you had to do is rotate. Some work Monday through Friday, others work Sunday through Thursday, some work Saturday through Wednesday. We alternated the days, but they had 2 days off during the week. If those that work, say, Sunday through Thursday, they'd have Friday and Saturday off. Those that work Sunday, Saturday and Sunday, they would have like Thursday and Friday off. Some would have Monday and Tuesday off.
As chief photographer, would you also evaluate the work?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I see.
Evaluate the work. At the end of the year, you also give an evaluation report to the newspaper and all the photographers on the consistency of their work. You see, you don't look at a paper. If a photographer comes out with a great news picture one day, and next day, in the next, say, 1 out of 100 pictures, a news job comes out good, you can't say that's good, because a news job, you're just shooting in your event what's happening. Your feature work is where the work is recognizable on the technical aspects of a photographer. You really tell his talent, and you could know a photographer from his feature work, his style, his approach, what he does. So through the course of a year, I had to evaluate each photographer. I keep a book every day on their work, a record on photographers. If I could see they're weak in some areas, I'd say, look, you better get something. And what happened in his job? He didn't come out good. Then he explained his reasons why he didn't come out good. And you talk to him. Sometime take him out to lunch and see what's problem he's having. Could have some problems at home or anything else. You got to be a chaplain too and converse with him. But you keep your tabs. It's your job of making sure a photographer is up to date. They could get into a area when they just, you know, they call burnout. I don't believe in that technology, burnout, really. I never was burned out.
Would you have had assigned to you that were working
14.
For? 14?
Yeah, 14. Then you had to schedule them to work 7 days a week and 2 days off for each photographer and work on a 20-hour shift. In other words, we didn't work from 11 to 5 in the morning because there was nothing happening. We'd pick it up at 7 in the morning, any other job or fire. In the middle of the night, I'd get calls in case something happened, any photographers. And the fellow we would call would be the photographer who worked at night, the 11 o'clock man. If anything happened at 1 o'clock in the morning, we'd call him because then you'd have to pay him overtime from 11 on. See, this is what you had to work, call it. You couldn't call a day photographer who quit at 5:30 or 6. You'd call a guy who left at 11. So I'd have a schedule at home also.
Now, did you have a regular schedule during this time of hours?
No, my hours were whenever. In other words, I'd be there, I'd get there at 9 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, leave about 5:30, 6 o'clock. I'd be there all through the week. I go there some Saturdays, and also, in other words, I had no hours. In other words, I remember what Lee Hills told me, always a very good thing. He said, a good manager of a photo department is a fellow who could put his hat and coat on and go out, take a walk, go to lunch, and the department would function. So I always had that theory because everybody knew what was going on. I could go out. They knew the assignments. They'd put on the names on the assignment. The department would function. Everybody knew what was the inside crew was there, able to put through stuff, and nothing ever happened. I mean, it worked very well that way.
Tony, you used in our discussions, you described the changes that took place in photojournalism, as you described it. When you started at the Free Press in 1946, was this the role of a photographer, or did this develop, this concept develop?
No. At that time, like I said, it came, at that time, I don't think they cared much, the fellow who was running the department. It developed later as you came along. It really started when I came in. I wanted everything to be written, assignments that came out and where they were going and what we had to photograph, feature stuff, not news jobs. And this developed with a system that we had arranged with the paper. We'd have a budget also. A budget, in other words, what we were going to cover that day. Put down a budget, the feature assignments. I'd have the whole listing at the times. So you may have overlaps. So look, we got too many feature jobs at 1 o'clock. We better reschedule that one at 4 or do it the next day. So we could not have, because the reporters didn't know exactly, or people downstairs making these assignments, how many we had a certain time. So I had an assignment board, but time. And if I'd see we'd be loaded at 2 o'clock, I said, look, we got 4 jobs at 2 o'clock and we can't handle that. Set this one up for 4, or set this up for tomorrow morning, your features. So you tell them, in other words, these are things, a job that you had in photo to warn the different departments. And they come up to me and said, I got a good feature job to do. When is a good time to do it? I look at my schedule, Simon Burtzel, look, I said, look, why don't you do it Tuesday? We don't have any jobs in the afternoon. Pick your time. And they'd set that up at that time. And we'd place these assignments so we could have assignments all through the week. They'd have weekdays, which worked very effectively with the departments. Many department heads would call me and say, what about, how's Tuesday look for a food job in a studio? And I'd say, well, we got fashions on Tuesday. How about Monday or Wednesday? Fine. Deadline. We'd set up a time and clear it. See, in other words, it would avoid overcrowding everything on one day, feature jobs. But I always kept two photographers handy for news jobs. Know where they were in case a news job broke. And also as a chief photographer, I would go out on assignments too. Running the department, I had the luxury of also going on assignments and doing whatever I want. Those assignments were picked either by the managing editor or city editor that they wanted me to go on. Mm-hmm. Say, Joe Stroud would call up and say, Tony, I got a job interview with Lee Iacocca. I'd like to have you do the interview with us. So I do that. All those that they wanted me to go on or any special assignment that come up, they come back and say, look, we got